You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Celtic Down Under weekend review as we look at Aberdeen 3, Celtic 3, Celtic going through to the Scottish Cup final 6-5 on penalties. If you think my hair is looking a little bit grayer, it is, because that was a bit too stressful. This week, I'm joined by, as always, with Paul Massey. Paul, how are you? How was your weekend? Before we dive into another stressful night at the office for Celtic supporters all over the world.
Well, I doesn't get much grayer than me already, so I probably added a few to the beards and to the hairline. But as I said to you just before we came on air, I had a few beers, so probably just had a little bit of stress buffering. But yeah, by penalties, even then, the stress was kicking in because it's not exactly been our strong suit this season, has it? So optimism was not particularly high, having thrown away not once, but twice a good lead right at the death. So we'll get into the detail on that in a bit. But yeah, obviously great weekend in terms of the result. Had a good weekend. I caught up with some mates earlier in the day for a nice bit of lunch and a few drinks. And then, yeah, Saturday, Sunday was just a bit of family time and a bit of recovery. So before getting back into the working week, which is a short one for me this week, I'm delighted to say we've got Anzac Day on Thursday, and I've taken the opportunity to take Friday off as well. So we will have a four-day weekend. I've actually got a development day with work tomorrow, so that'll be sitting around a hotel listening to some nonsense and eating some free food. And so basically it's a Monday and Wednesday working week for me, which is not too bad given it's already Monday night. So yeah, the way you looking at me and shaking your head suggests to me you'll be working the public holiday and there'll be no long weekend for you.
Well, normally I do get Fridays off, but this week I'm actually working Thursday and Friday. So I'm actually working more days than I normally do. And it's going to be busier because it is a public holiday this week. So if everyone loses their minds and decides to come at the pharmacy. So I'm going to be pretty flat out. But I'm great. I'm very grateful that you're going to have a nice, easy week, Paul. That's great. I was actually assembling a bed just before the Scottish Cup semi-final. I don't know what was more stressful because they didn't send enough screws to put the bed together. So I had to down tools on that one. Thankfully, Bunnings, the Australian B&Q, had what I needed on Sunday morning so I could get that task finished. But yes, put to bed, exactly, put to bed. So that was, not quite what Celtic did during the match, but we'll get to that in a second. We've got 420 somewhere saying afternoon, hail, 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 hail to you, wherever you are in the world, presumably somewhere in Scotland, if it's afternoon there. It's 8:30 p.m. where we are. So, Paul, obviously, Scottish Cup final, semi-final, I should say, not the final. We're obviously got into the final, but semi-final. We made two changes. So Callum McGregor coming back into the team at the expense of Tomoki Iwata, who's, you know, been an able deputy in his absence. And then Liam Scales coming back into the centre-half position in place of Mike Narowski, who covered him for injury last week. Yang retaining spot out wide. Kyogo still up front. And obviously with Aberdeen, we knew beforehand that Graham Shinney was going to be suspended. They picked up a booking in the quarterfinal. So that meant that they had to reshuffle their midfield and they lost their captain. But you really couldn't tell, did you? How are you feeling going into the game? Because obviously Aberdeen, I looked them up just, you know, get the statistics before I came on. Ninth in the league, 8 wins, 11 draws, 5 points clear of relegation playoff. Not a great season. They've gone through 2 managers on a caretaker manager at the moment to get them through at the end of the season when they've signed the boy from somewhere in Scandinavia. I can't remember where exactly.
Ellsberg.
Yeah, thanks. So, so how are you sort of feeling? Were you thinking it's going to be an easy day at the office? Did you think it was going to be a ding dong, like, you know, strappy do like it ended up turning out being? Or where was your optimism given you'd had a few and you're all sort of ready to rock and roll?
Well, even before having a few in the run up to it, I was relatively confident. We, you know, we've put a few results together. They are where they are. On the one hand, you could say, well, they've got nothing to lose. They can come and have a go, which is kind of what happened. But based on form, you wouldn't have fancied them to do too much. And as I say, we were sort of tails up and a wee bit of momentum. But and obviously, even the Aberdeen fans sort of voted with their feet. I think there's only 8,000 of them there. And in the end, when they'd been sort of bullishly suggesting they should have had a 50-50 cut from the start, and then, I guess, a bit sheepishly, pun intended, they had to give back quite a bit of tickets, and it was basically almost like a home fixture for us. But yeah, like, you know, without sounding like a broken record cliche, you know, cup ties, you know, anything can happen, and it kind of did. It was, you know, everything was there. If you were a neutral, which I don't know how many of those there were, tuning in, you'd have thoroughly enjoyed the spectacle. I was a little bit disappointed to see Scales come straight back in. You know, it wasn't a huge surprise because he's, you know, you'd expect Rodgers to be pretty loyal, but Navrowski had a good game and we had a clean sheet. And you just sort of think, obviously, I've been critical of Scales, and it feels like, and I've been critical for Scales for a long time, even when
he's been consistent. That's a consistent point for you. Yep.
It's a consistent point. I feel like the rest of the support is finally catching up. Because
this is true. This is
now
true.
Consistently that he's not Celtic class, and you know there are faults there, and you'll remember, and anyone that was listening back then, I said the things that are issue, and everybody sort of picked up on the distribution, and that's fine. But the things that concerned me very early on in the season, and it only caught him out occasionally, and he didn't always get punished for it, was the ball over the top, and being caught out over his head, and as soon as you stick it in behind him, he's all over the place. And you know, I made that point consistently early in the season, and sort of got shouted down in various points, but it came home to roost twice at critical points. And we're very lucky, actually, if we sit here today, we're very lucky to be in the cup final, because we didn't play very well and we gifted opportunities when the game was done. And if we're being hypercritical, if this has become a bit of a pattern this season. We only have to go back a couple of weeks to Ibrox when we should have seen that game out. And yes, we've got a bit of an edge in the title race thanks to them having a bit of a collapse, but we should be further ahead on the basis that we should have put that game to bed, and we couldn't see it out, and we couldn't see this out. At the end of the day, it's a draw. We've had to rely on a complete lottery of penalties, and we'll get into it, but fair play to the guys. They, you know, the ones that did step up, for the most part, hit good penalties, and we'll get into that. But we shouldn't have been there. You know, this is a team that, as you say, languishing in the bottom. They're closer to relegation than anything else. And we have We've contrived to nearly throw that away. So yeah, disappointed for Narovsky. I thought he should have started. Yang, I think, is a lucky guy to be starting, and really did next to nothing. Which again, we know we've got problems with the wingers. But he was anonymous. I was an advocate for McGregor coming back, but he's still not fit. He can't be fit. He was off the pace again, and we looked better when he went off and Iwata came back in. So there's only a few games left. Another week on the training ground will make a difference. But yeah, I was still confident that the players there should have got the job done, and I still maintain they should have. But I did think there was a few selection issues that weren't exactly, you know, exactly what I was looking for, put it that way.
Dr. Strangelove saying, hail, hail, fellas. Hail, hail to you. Smell the glove. Hail, hail, guys. Hail, hail to you as well. And then Strangelove, the doctor, saying it was a really good cup game, a classic. Well, I think, you know, I think from the neutral, still, you know, we got there in the end. So, I mean, you know, as a Celtic supporter, fantastic, we got through. But it's skinny your teeth stuff. And, you know, I had absolutely zero confidence during that penalty shootout. I just thought we'd blown our chances during the match. We'd given up too many chances to them because, I mean, you know, we'll talk about the penalty. There wasn't a penalty, but, you know, again, another day, the foul on AJ isn't given. It's a penalty in any other shake. Scales was lucky in the first half that he was outside the box. Otherwise, that would have been a penalty. And then not to mention a couple of chances they had. They're the one, I can't remember the guy's name now, but he took a wide touch. And if he'd have taken a better first touch, he was in on goal.
Toilet.
Joe Hart pulls a very good save in the first half, comes out and closes the angle down very quickly. So you have to say they had really good chances that they didn't take. Obviously, Miowski, he takes his chance in the second minute of the game, really sets the tie up from Aberdeen's point of view. And it's lackadaisical from us. There's a lack of pressure from Yang initially out wide. The ball comes into the middle and it's AJ pressing for some reason. So somehow that pass has bypassed our entire central midfield. And then Miowski's made a good run rolling off the back of Carter Vickers. You feel that Stales and Carter Vickers have gone at the same ball. And the ball's played in the back and you can't give Miowski that much time and space because he's timed his run really well. And Joe Hart's done well to get out, but, you know, fair play. Like, you know, the guy's he knows he's a good finisher and he makes it 1-0. So, Paul, I mean, at that point, you're thinking, it's now another tough day at the office. Like, we've shot ourselves in the foot again. We're going to have to come from behind in a cup final. 2 minutes in, you're thinking, gee, like, we just don't do ourselves any favours. And then you're sort of saying, it's been the story of our season, but it kind of has been. In that first 10, 15 minutes, we were pretty rank rotten. We were very, very average. And then we sort of go off the canvas and sort of realise, oh, yeah, hey, guys, we're in a game here. And probably, you know, for the next, you know, the rest of the half into the start of the second half, looked the goods and then dropped off again. And I think the word that Brendan Rodgers used in his post-match to Celtic TV was a lack of control. And that, for me, was probably one of the most concerning things, was that we just, there was periods in the game where we did have control, but then there was large periods of the game where we had no control. And it was just ping pong. It was really end-to-end stuff. And, you know, like you say, Aberdeen not travelling terribly well. They've obviously got the threat of Miowski up front. Thankfully, he ended up coming off because he, you know, he's cramped and had to come off, thankfully. But, you know, every time the ball got up there, you just, it was hard on most stuff because they looked quite dangerous when they did get in a decent position. But they just seemed to do it with alarming frequency. And I take your point with Scales, like, you know, again, getting conned to the ball for two of the goals that we'll get into. But just, I felt there was a couple of occasions where they were getting, Carter Vickers and Stales were getting in each other's road, and it was just panic stations at times. And you're sort of thinking, why are we in this situation? Like, it's a, you know, that partnership's probably been one of the most regular partnerships this season, like defensively, that back four, with back five with Joe Hart, but we seem to be all over the place. I don't know, I'm kind of rambling here, Paul, but like, again,
It's the nature of there has been a lot of chopping and changing. Carter Vickers has been out for a lot of games as well. I'd love to see the stats in terms of how many games in a row a partnership has played together and who those partnerships are, because if one's not out, the other has been. Scales has been consistently being the sort of person that's always played pretty much until this little injury here. And then on the other side, there's been a roll through of Carter Vickers, of Welsh, of Narowski, and then obviously a little bit out the other side as well. Opening goal is just hopeless. We've come out in a sleep. We're asleep. Starts with a poor clearance by Scales. I don't know if he's trying to clear it or he's trying to play up the line. Like, Yang's got a choice to either let it go out and then just reset, but he decides to try and keep it in play just to the advantage of Aberdeen. Then there's no pressure on the ball. The Aberdeen player, the fullback, plays a good ball in to the middle, and there's a little knockoff, but he's completely bypassed Callum McGregor. I've no idea what he's up to. He's cut out. He's not where he should be. Scales at that point he's got sucked up in towards that area. He gets bypassed. And yeah, Carter Vickers is the deepest lying player, but he's playing Miovski on, and he gets tucked in behind him. And after that, you know, you're not expecting a player of that quality to miss. And sure enough, he tucks it away. It's just generally poor defending right across the midfield and defensive unit. And we've spoken about that quite a lot, and it won't be the first time we talk about it in tonight's show, because whilst Scales is, you know, a prime candidate for blame to be pointed at, he's not alone. And we do defend as a unit. So we'll get into that in a bit. But just hugely disjointed. Carl being off the pace was a massive factor in it, because we never, you're right, and so is Brendan Rodgers, we never got any real control. We never got a hold of the ball in the midfield. And therefore, because our wings are weak, there's not an opportunity. If we're not getting anything out wide, it's got to come from the midfield three. And because McGregor wasn't getting on the ball and dictating play, he wasn't feeding Hatate and Matt O'Riley. And that meant Hatate was marginalised for at least most of the first half. He had a bit of a spell, I think, towards the sort of back part of the first half and into the, into the second half. But for far too long, we didn't get him on the ball, and we weren't feeding him to do what he can do in more dangerous areas. Yang, as I say, was anonymous. I thought Kuhn had a half-decent game without a huge amount of output. He's still a bit hit and miss. And then, you know, if we're talking about wingers, then obviously James Forrest makes a massive impact. And there's a broader discussion to probably have later on when we start to speak about his goals in terms of his contribution and where does that leave us with wingers for.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
For the remaining parts of the season. But yeah, the first half, a good chunk of the first half was really disappointing. I guess we should, you know, work our way into the equalizer, and it sort of comes out of nothing, and it comes from good pressure by Kyogo, and singular pressure. We didn't really press that well as a unit, and that's, you know, you think about the first half at Ibrox, we pressed brilliantly as a unit. We put them under so much pressure. We basically blew them away with our press as a unit and high up the pitch.
Who's the missing element in that though?
Well, Dizamera, isn't it? So you just don't get that replication from anyone else. But at the end of the day, yes, he's got a phenomenal engine, but these are all professional, fit, young athletes. I really don't see that you can't at least try and replicate that to some degree. Yeah, you probably not. He's a bit of a Duracell bunny. You're not going to get that from any of the rest of them consistently. But you've got to try and match, you know, the Endeavour and the same sort of tactical pressure. Kyogo does brilliantly. To be fair, the defender dallies on it and gets it stuck under his feet, but Kyogo's in and all over him like a rash, nicks it away. If anything, he'll probably be disappointed that he didn't get his own goal, because he just sort of delays the strike slightly. And it's a great defensive block. I think it's Garterman will be very disappointed that it just unfortunately rolls right into Kuhn's path. And yeah, you could say it's a tap in, it's an open goal, but you know, it would be easy to snatch at that, and he's just controlled that. You know, it's just a nice controlled sort of slotted pass into the back of the net, and he takes it really well, and it gets us back in the game. And we use it as a platform from there, and we do sort of play our way back into the game. And kind of from that point for the next sort of period, well, most of the game after that, apart from the odd set piece, you sort of expect that, you know, if anyone else is going to score, it would be us. And we huff and puff a bit, but not till a couple of substitutions do we actually then find our breakthrough and sort of, it should be done and dusted from there. But as we know, it wasn't.
Yes, indeed. William Atul, hail to you, William. Who's the snitch? Aston, did you check out Salty Cracker Anthony? No, I haven't, because I couldn't remember the name of the guy, but I have written it down, so I will check that out after we get off air, because I forgot last week, so apologies, but I will check that out. My doppelganger, apparently. Maeda was a big miss, and we kind of, my dad all week's going, oh, we're going to miss Maeda. And just his energy down that left wing has left a bit of a hole in our team at the moment, and I don't think Yang is going to be the answer to now to the end of the season. I'm not saying Yang won't come in to be a player. He's just not what we need right now. And he's a little bit too light on, not enough pressure, and just not enough output. And if he's whipping in crosses, and I think there's a bit of a disadvantage. I think he does suit the right wing better than the left wing. But obviously you've got Kuhn, who is an out-and-out right winger. He's not going to dislodge him. So then you're back to thinking, well, Luis Palma's got to factor back into the frame, but then you sort of looked at his output and performance, and you're sort of saying, well, he didn't have the greatest of games when he came off the bench. Definitely responsible for their equaliser, but we'll get, you know, responsible for the turnover that led to their equaliser, make it 2-2. But definitely at halftime, 1-1, we survived the penalty shout for Stales. Obviously, VAR showed that the ball that contacted his hand just outside the box, so therefore it couldn't be a penalty. And because VAR apparently can't issue free kicks, it was just playback to Celtic. So I wasn't 100% sure about that, but apparently that's the rule, so that was okay. So, you know, you could say we got away with one. You could say that Stales was unlucky because he sort of put his arm out to rest on the Aberdeen attacking player. But, you know, end of the day, it is what it is. And, you know, we get away with one to a degree. So we go into half time, you're thinking, all right, well, you know, we've probably finished the half the better team, as you say, Paul. We've got back into the game with a mistake from their captain at the back. You're thinking, well, all right, let's go out and put in a performance this second half, because we didn't really put one in the first half. So you're thinking, well, Celtic's perfectly capable of, like, you know, flicking a switch, because we've seen it happen so many times this season. And like you say, it wasn't until the introduction of James Forrest. And I think that was, when was that? That was around
62.
About 62 minutes. Yeah.
So he's on the part for less than, for less than 2 minutes by the time he scores. And he's already.
He'd had a chance before that. So at that point, Awata comes on for McGregor, Forrest comes on for Yang. And then, like I said, we go 2-1 up. Because James Forrest, he's direct. Like, he just gets the ball, gets it down, knows what he's doing, has intent. And, I mean, I don't think it was the greatest of strikes, but he hit it in the corner hard enough to get it away from Kelly Roos, and he was never getting there. But it's just, I just think sometimes Celtic this season, we just seem so guilty of trying to, like, walk it into the goal. Like, taking an extra touch or trying to play an extra pass when somebody just needs to take responsibility and have a shot. And I'm not saying we go back to the Ryan Christie days where you have somebody having like arsehole winders from 40 yards out, but I just feel that at times we kind of overdo it, like we just to death. And it's like that these guys are like trained footballers. Like surely they should be able to hit a shot from 20 yards, 25 yards out. If they've got the opening, and there's obviously, I understand if there's two defenders in your way, but if you can create that half a yard of space, and you know, let's face it, James Forrest, he's not exactly grease lightning these days. Like he relies on that little one touch that he does. He's done it his whole career, but like he just creates that yard of space for himself, and that's what he's done in this instance, and he's just spanked it. It's like we should be doing more of that, and we just seem to fall into this trap of trying to play the ball into Kyogo or into Matt O'Reilly, and then they get all tangled up because they've got like a sea of defenders around them. But it just looks easy, at least. And if you have a shot and the keeper saves it and it parries out, then, you know, like you say, in the first half when we scored our first goal, there's usually someone backing it up, so you're usually in with half a chance. But this at 2-1, I'm thinking that's a good goal. Yeah, but I just felt that wasn't going to be enough. I, you know, given how the season's been going, given how the game was going, I would say, I put in the group chat, I said, we're going to need another goal here. Like 2-1's not going to be enough. And yeah, so after that, there was a few chances for them. Like, you know, obviously there was the one, again, the black lad that plays for Aberdeen, he got the ball out wide. And if he'd have taken a better first touch, he's in on goal.
Yeah, Junior Hoyland. Junior Hoyland. There was a good flick on. I think there was a flick on. Maybe Sockler flicked it on between both our centre backs and got somebody away. I think Miofsky got Miofsky away from there. And then he just squared it into to Hoylett. And yeah, you're right. He just took a slightly heavy touch. And Hart did well as well. Like he came out and closed the angle and made himself big. And yeah, he just skews his shot and into the side netting. But that was a bit of a warning sign that, you know, they were able to break and that we were not all that secure. Then you follow up in the next incident with Oil. It is obviously the apparently majorly controversial decision. If you keep an eye out on social media with pundit led commentary, that's
unwatch.
Well, even Michael Stewart in commentary went, that's an incredible decision, I think as he called it. I was like, well, is it really a incredible decision? I don't think it is. I think if you see it again, if that contact on Alistair Johnston from Junior Hoylett happens with no contact on the ball, by the way, if that happens anywhere else in the pitch, it's a free kick and nobody's arguing the toss. He heavily leads with his arm, he jumps in and into him, and he clatters into the back of Alistair Johnston. And there's no contact on the ball. Yeah, they're both jumping towards the ball, but there's no contact on the ball. And as we know, you don't even need to, doesn't matter, even if you get the ball, it can still be a foul, as we found out again in the Derby match recently. So I don't think there's much controversial with that. I think the controversy comes in terms of that not just being blown up there and then.
The delay in making the decision.
Yeah, and a lot of people are sort of suggesting that Don Robertson didn't see that. That's one of the theories, is he didn't see it, and it was reverse engineered to give Celtic an out. Nonsense. I think he has absolutely seen it, but he's got to be 100% sure. And with the benefit of VAR, he doesn't have to make a call immediately as he sees it. He can let the game play out.
Well, for argument's sake, say we clear our lines. Is there any point blowing up for a free kick? You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those ones where Carter Vickers was trying to clear the ball, and you know Hoyland gets up and gets in the way, and obviously causes a bit of a skirmish. But I
think the other thing is if he's only got one quick view of it, right? So if he thinks it's a free kick, but he might get it wrong, and then the ball falls and somebody smashes into the net, and he's already blown up a foul, he's in more trouble if he's blown up before somebody scores, and it turns out that wasn't a foul. So he knows with the benefit of VAR, if he lets it play out and the ball ends up in the net, even he thinks it's a free kick, he's got VAR to go. He goes, I think it's a free kick. Can you just confirm that that should be a free kick and we'll rule it out? So he's got that. He's got the time. He's also got his other referees, assistant refs, fourth official. He's got them in his ear feeding them information. So, and he's telling them what he's seeing as well. So they're entitled to take time to get to the right decision. The other thing that's key, I think, in this is it's Højlund that makes the foul, and it's Højlund that then benefits or would have benefited from the foul because he's the player, in theory, who gets fouled. Now, I've read some other stuff. I'm not a massive fan of the Behind the Whistles podcast, but I found this one interesting. They are convinced that that's not a foul. Just in its, and I think it's probably that probably is a foul, which possibly should be a penalty. But they're saying if you're swinging your leg towards the ball and somebody plants their foot in between it when you're already moving, you're already hitting, you're already in the act of swinging for the ball, it shouldn't be a foul because they've enforced their position upon an act that was already in play. Now, that's interpretation. Their view is that shouldn't be a free kick. We've obviously had a pretty big example of that being a free kick where Dessus has put himself in between Lagabielka and it's been deemed a foul. But actually, that was, you know, a foul to the Celtic player. So in that regard, if you apply the same methodology, then it's actually a foul against Howlett because he's come across the kicking leg. So, but all of that's kind of moot as soon as you decide that it's a foul for the contact on Alistair Johnston. Everything else afterwards makes zero odds. It's the same as the derby around about Christmas when. Yeah. You know, they had made a big song and dance about it, but there was a hand, you know, there's a handball. Well, he was offside, so it doesn't matter if it's a handball. It's you take that decision happens first. So yeah, I get the narrative, but I think as usual it's been overblown. I think they came to the right decision. And just because you nearly got a penalty there and you nearly got a penalty with Scales being on the edge of the box. Enough nearlies doesn't mean you get one. Like, yeah, they had, and you know, they get themselves out of jail twice with late goals by Shock and defending, and admittedly good deliveries. And they give themselves a lottery chance, and they still couldn't take it. So, I haven't got too much sympathy for Aberdeen. They punched well above their weight during the tie, and ultimately they ran out of steam at the end.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Paul, because I mean, like you say, it's these what if scenarios. It's like, well, you know, it didn't happen. So like tough. But you know, they did create a couple of good chances for themselves and they didn't take those either. So I mean, they can sit there and point the finger at the referee, but like they had their own chances within the game to win the match and they didn't take them. And it was two Hail Marys at the end of normal time, at the end of extra time that you know, got them into a penalty shootout, and in which case, you know, it's a lottery to a degree. You know, obviously, you can practice these things and you can plan them, but obviously it's who handles the pressure better at the time. And, you know, like I said, I wasn't handling it terribly well in my living room, but that's all right. We'll get there in a minute. I was 84 of us watching live at the moment, so thank you very much. Love all your comments. I'm keeping an eye on them, so feel free to get involved in the chat. Definitely, I think Strangelove the Doctor was on the Valium because he was very chilled out and he thinks he probably needs to rewatch it again because I wish I had your confidence because I certainly didn't have it, particularly the longer the game went on. Maesh is sort of saying that you might not have Dries Luyten, but Forrest looked quicker and more dangerous than Kuhn and Yang. There was actually some shouts from certain sections of the fan media that, you know, Forrest should have got a start on the weekend, and I wasn't one who felt that, you know, James Forrest, we should be relying on him to start games, but I definitely feel that he can come off the bench and make a contribution. But, you know, Kuhn, I agree with you, Paul, did enough. But I definitely think we need to look at someone other than Yang for the next game. So
I was going to say, like, so you said before, you know, you didn't think Forrest warranted a start this time based on not just this performance, but in recent weeks? Does he start against Dundee?
Well, it's him or it's going to be him or Palmer. My only concern with James Forrest is that it's the David Turnbull effect. When he comes on, he's playing against players that have ran around for 60, 70 minutes already. So that gives you a little bit of a lift because these guys have already been theoretically been run ragged by a Yang or a Maeda or a Kuhn or whoever. And then James Forrest comes on and does his thing for 20, 30 minutes and, you know, pops up with a goal. Fantastic. Can he do that from the start of a game? I suspect that is the reason why we have not seen as much of James Forrest as maybe we should have done. I kind of feel that, you know, that's why we're using him off the bench for that reason. And that's okay. But, you know, I just think we need someone other than Yang. So for me, you think, well, Palmer would probably be the logical choice given that he occupied that left wing position for large chunks of the season so far. He's coming back from injury. So, all right, he's maybe not 100%, but I think having Forrest as your first choice sub off the bench for the run in of games we've got to come up, I think that's fair enough. That's my concern is that can he do it from the start of a game? And I know he got dragged in the Hearts game. I think it was when Yang got sent off. I think he was the sacrificial lamb that day. And we never really got to see like what he could do in a starting sort of situation. I think it's got to be Palmer and give him another opportunity. And you know, they're your players that you spent your money on at the start of the season, Palmer and Kuhn. So, you know, they should be in there and you know, earning the dosh, as it were. And we'll see sort of where we
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Where we're at, but what is strange? Love a doctor. So he's saying Forrest played really well, but deployment's impact sub moving forward. So he agrees with me. Get in the comments. What do you think? James Forrest should get a start against Dundee next week or this week coming, or do we think that he's a bench player at best? I'm curious to see what we think because obviously Paul and I are maybe slightly. Not disagreeing, but you know, have different views on that. So that's
well, no, we don't. I was playing devil's advocate and seeing what you thought. No, I think Palmer should start. He didn't cover himself in glory, but in terms of output, he's probably produced as much as anyone all season. Yes, he said the injury, he's still coming back. He's only got 6 games to get up to speed, but he's not going to get up to speed sitting on the bench, is he? So I think he's actually got the ability to produce both goals and assists in the running, more likely than Yang, I would say, both on current, you know, on Yang's current form and on their form for the pair of them across the season. So I think, you know, as annoying as it is this late in the season, that you still got players come, you know, Rhea Itati's still coming back from injury. McGregor's clearly still coming back from injury. Lewis Palmer's coming back from injury, but these are three players that would potentially, you know, certainly two out of the three would be starters every time. But for Maeda, Palmer's, you know, when Maeda's been out this season, it's always been Palmer. So I think you're right, and there is definitely an element of Forrest offering you something different. 100% for me, he'd be the first man off the bench, like before Yang or whoever's not been the pick. But yeah, the lack of Maeda is a big miss, and it's one we're going to have to try to find a solution for in every match between now and the end of the season. But there's obviously two or three ties that are going to miss him more than others.
And I think, yeah, there was definitely a mention here. It was Patrick McLaughlin that's saying, you know, he's a worry considering how quiet he keeps Tavernier. So yeah, so that's definitely a few games away, but yeah, something we're going to have to try and figure out between now and then. Paul, 2 each at the end of normal time. We turn over possession. Again, this lack of control. So Palmer, the culprit, gives the ball away. Ball gets out wide. All he has to do is just carry it. I mean, there was no one pressing him. He just tries to play the quick transition ball and unfortunately passes it straight to an Aberdeen player. So he gets back out wide, back out to your man, who seemed to be in all the action, Howlett, who has all the time in the world because AJ is a mile off him. So he finally gets out to him, the edge of the box, and he's curled in a very wicked sort of cross to the back stick. Very tempting. Crying out for a centre half just to, you know, get a nod on it and clear it away. But unfortunately, Stales is caught looking over his head. Greg Taylor's behind Esther Sokla, who was the substitute who came on. And Esther's like, thank you very much. Free header, back stick, two each. Picks up a yellow card for his efforts for celebrating with the Aberdeen faithful to the 8,000 go wild. And not that we didn't see it coming, but like I'm starting going like, this is just par for the course. Like, you know, we're just like 2-1. It was a good goal from Forrest. Saying, that'd just be nice just to see us out here. We'll take it. We'll walk away in our cup final. But nope, not going to have to do it the hard way. So that forced us into extra time. And again, we're the ones that come up with the next, well, what we thought was a winner, Matt O'Reilly. James Forrest giving us some width, which was, again, it was something I should have mentioned earlier, but I kind of felt we lacked width for a lot of the match. We were very narrow, and there was one thing that I agree with Mikey Stewart. I don't always agree with Mikey Stewart, but I was agreeing with him in commentary that Celtic were very narrow, and every time Kuhn got the ball and every time Yang got the ball, their first instinct was to drive inside. And it's like, feel free to go at the touchline and whip a ball over, and you could count, all right, it will happen maybe once or twice while the two of them were on the park. But James Forrest gets out nice and wide on the touchline. Perfectly weighted pass in front of Alistair Johnson, who's doing the inside run. He looks up, cut back to Matt O'Reilly. Great first touch from Matt O'Reilly, and he smacks it into the top corner. 3-2, keeper with no chance. And you're thinking, surely that will be the goal that gets us to Hampden again at the end of the year, or end of the season. And then you put in the comments, Paul, we need to score another one. And I went, you're probably right, you probably do. And we had our chances, didn't we? I mean, I think they score, and then Ida had his golden opportunity at the end. I think he had the header.
So Ida's great chance was in normal time. So they scored in 90th minute, and then he had an injury to, like, in the however many minutes of injury time.
Sorry, he did.
He had a gilt edge chance that his first touch is just a bit heavy, and then he's stretching and leaning back, and again, it's blocked. Even after losing the first equaliser, we could have probably had it put to bed in the 90 plus. But no, we headed into extra time, and O'Reilly's goal is class. It really is, you know, example of, to your point, using the width of the park, finding runners. It's about as simple a goal as you get. You know, get it to your wide man, tuck it in behind to other runners, and then have it's do you know what, it was a very Ange Postecoglou team kind of goal. Get it wide, get it to the byline, cut it back, have players arriving, you know, finish it. And O'Reilly, to show that, you know, he's a class act, but to show that level of composure in a crowded box, you know, at whatever it was by that point, you know, 115-120 minutes, and yeah, one good touch to get it out of his feet, and then just, you know, lifts it into the top corner to clear all the clutter of bodies around. It's just class. And yeah, it should have been enough. It should have been enough. Like, as I said at the top of the show, we should be able to see these games out. And it's worrying now that we're coming down the final stretch. We're gonna need to close games out by a single goal to win the title and to win the cup. So we're gonna have to find solutions. And you know, the manager and the coaching staff have got a week every time, apart from, I think, the second last game of the season's midweek. So they've got time with the players on the training pitch. They're going to need it because they need to work on closing games out. Good teams win games by single goals, and we've not looked like doing that all season. And again, we failed to do it again on the weekend.
Pam saying, hail, hail, everyone. Hope you're keeping well. We are, Pam. Thank you for joining us. We're 100 live. obviously, guys, if you can like this episode of the Celtic Down Under podcast when you're on YouTube, it helps other like-minded Celts find the channel and find us every Monday night when there's a game during the week. So you'll be with us for the next 4 or 5 weeks till the end of the season, one way or another. If it was up to Mahesh, his algorithms are predicting potentially one more loss and two more draws. Mahesh, don't get my blood pressure any higher than it already is, mate. We're not hoping for something better than that. But like you say, the writing sometimes is on the wall. But carbon copy for the third goal, Paul, for Aberdeen. It was pretty much the same delivery. It was from the same side. It came across, same defender making the same mistake.
Same two defenders making the same.
Great.
Alistair Johnson, he's the main difference. It's, it looks like a carbon copy, but I think, and I wanted to watch this a third or fourth time to be sure, but I'm pretty sure the first cross comes in with his left foot and the second cross comes in with his right foot, but they pretty much end up in the exact same spot. Alistair Johnson is absolutely accountable because he doesn't put any pressure on. The first one, he just stands off and let him curl it around him and past him and over him with the left foot. On the second one, he dilly-dallies and doesn't do much pressure and then shows him inside. And then he just produces just as good a cross on that side as he did on the other. And sorry to sound like a broken record. And look, he has performed above his level for chunks of the season and in key games, and he has contributed. But Scales is absolutely culpable at the back post twice. It's his area. He's absolutely got to win that ball on both occasions.
Bearing in mind at this point, we've got three centre-halves on the park. So we've got
exactly
CCV, we've got Narosti on for Forrest to try and shore up the back line. Obviously, Rogers felt we were a bit sugarly peg. And then sure enough, like with three centre-halves, we're still getting done by that ball again. I was not happy, Jen. I already shouted at the TV a few times that night, but
there's no way your centre-back shouldn't be defending balls to the back post. That's absolutely the area that you need to be defending. And to have it float over your head and be nodded in behind you once is poor.
To have it done twice is
absolutely embarrassing. We've gone from a clean sheet last week to three this week, and that's the difference in the defence. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, Mike Narovsky plays and we have a clean sheet, but we looked far more secure last week with both him and Welsh, to be honest. Big decisions to be made. Narovsky would start for me for the rest of the season. Whether that happens, I have my doubts. But I'm not sure how long you can keep making excuses and have a loyalty to a player who's continually making errors and costing you. The only reason Greg Taylor's position has been rock solid is because we have no replacement for him. And that's a story that's sort of dominated part chunks of the season in terms of recruitment. And the same is kind of true of Alistair Johnston. He's been very patchy. He's looked good in games recently, but he's also been poor at times, and he was again defensively. He does most of his best work going forward, and he's been caught a few times, and this game was another example. And Ralston's a good solid player, but you know he's not better than that. So he's not going to be putting enough pressure on. We shoot ourselves in the foot again, and that's it. We're off to a penalty shootout. And given how well we've done on penalties this season, I'm sure the majority of us had hearts and mouths and were not particularly optimistic. I did notice that when I watched the commentary back, I watched it on Celtic TV, so I didn't get this commentary, but when I watched it back in the highlights, the commentator was delightfully telling us that Adam Ida missed his last penalty, and then Palmer's missed two out of his last four. I was like, oh, that's our first two takers. He's delighted. But I would say that the penalties that we hit sort of defied how we've hit penalties all season. And you sort of scratch your head and go, why have we been so poor on penalties all season? When in probably the most pressure situation we've had all season, they're just stroking them in near enough, like putting, sending people the wrong way, a couple of steps up and popping them in beautifully. I just like, great, brilliant. But I where's that been all season?
I put the phone down because I didn't want to do a group chat, whatever, because I wasn't sure who was in the delay and who was whatever. I was like, now the phone's getting put down. I was watching this, like, so Ida steps up. I'm thinking he's going to score because I know he missed his last one, but he always scores his penalties. So he took a good penalty. I went, all right, 1-0. They scored a good one. So that was their main penalty taker. So that was one each. And then Palmer steps up and I'm going, he gives me the fear, especially when he does that little staggery run up thing that he does. But he kind of didn't really do that. And yeah, he sent the keeper the wrong way. So that was fine. Really two each. And then it was, who was the third one after that? It was...
Matt O'Reilly.
Yep. So class. Again, he obviously connected thingy a couple of weeks ago. So I thought, well, he's not going to do that again, but he's obviously got the confidence to hit one. So that they were the three in my head that went, well, they're all going to hit penalties, right? After that, I'm starting to scratch my head going, well, who's your fourth and fifth? Because Forrest is off the park. You know, Kildare doesn't hit them. Cal McGregor's off the park. So you start thinking, well, who's going to step up? So I thought maybe AJ would maybe step up. And then, and obviously Joe Hart was a bit of a surprise sort of thing. So we obviously take that lead, and Joe Hart's obviously the opportunity.
Well, yeah, but Bernardo hits the fourth penalty, doesn't he? And it's probably the weakest of the four.
Yes,
after that
that's
point.
Right.
But
yeah, sorry. Yeah.
It's close enough to the corner that Roosh can't get to, and it's, you know, it's a bit of a big exhale, but it's. It makes it. But then in the aftermath of Bernardo's penalty, we have, you know, in a game where you don't think anything else weird can happen, their keeper gets injured in the penalty shootout.
Yeah.
Well, he has severe cramp.
Cramp.
And then he needs treatment. He tries to get up. He falls back into the net. And there's a lengthy delay.
Yeah.
And it's their player up next. So... you know, I've seen Aberdeen fans going, oh, you could just have managed to have the cramp when a Celtic player was waiting to take the next one, which obviously would have been beneficial to them, but you can't really time when cramp's going to strike. So, yeah, really bad timing for Duncan. He's there and then he decides to, I think his captain pulls him away and sort of
walks away
to the center circle and then he comes back up and, yeah, he's a young kid. He's, you know, he's not played a lot this season. He's played a few in other seasons, but he's still a young guy, I think. And yeah, he just catches the inside of the post, and that, you know, hit the inside of the post, it could go anywhere. It could, you know, you've seen them zip across the line, hit the other post and potentially go in, or hit the keeper and go back in. But in this case, it pops back out and we think, here we go. And I'll be honest as well, because, you know, in the pressure of everything else and, you know, the fuzz of a few beers, I'd missed entirely that you know, nobody else was walking up. And I know some of the commentators, so why is there not a Celtic player walking up? But yeah, obviously Joe Hart steps up, and there's been a lot of discussion about this in the sort of 48 hours since, in that, you know, is it a bit kamikaze? Is it a bit, you know, a bit too sentimental, blah, blah, blah. But clearly he... From the post-match interview with both Hart and Rodgers, it seems like this was decided before the day of the match, by the sounds of it. So it was decided in the week based on penalties, practice, confidence, and fair play to Joe Hart. You know, he's an absolute leader. And if he smashes it in, or even if it scuds in off the post or whatever, you know, he goes, oh, yeah, hero, and, you know, we're all delighted, even if it's, you know, if it's a bit weird. But is a little bit concerning that there wasn't another player, especially when two more come behind him after he misses. So, and hit pretty decent penalties. So
yeah, good penalties. Both those penalties were solid. And I'm thinking, where were you like one penalty before? But well, I guess, well, I'm with you, Paul. Like, Joe Hart had the guts and the stones and the balls, whatever you want to call it, to step up and hit a penalty. And given our penalty woes this season, I went, well, if he's confident enough to hit it, then fine. Like, I haven't got a problem with that. And he's unlucky. I mean, he's enough power on it. He's just slightly sloughed it and it's just hit the post. But he knew what he was doing, because obviously Kel Roos said, yeah, his hammy had gone by that point. It was cramped. So all he had to do was put it in the corner and it was it was a certain goal. The keeper was never getting there, but unfortunately he hits it a little bit too far wide and hits the post. But I don't have a problem with the keeper hitting a penalty per se. If he's confident, and as Brendan Rodgers said in his post-match, says the work you do for a penalty shootout is done before you even get to the ground. Like, it's not like drawing names out of a hat and going, oh, fuck, who's going to hit a penalty? It's like they knew who was doing what before that eventuality even came up, and they'd practiced it. So that's fine. I mean, yeah, all right, you can point the finger at a couple of the outfield players and say, like, why didn't they step up? I mean, AJ Nawata hit very good penalties. Just sort of saying, well, hey, guys, like, you probably could have been in the top five there, but hindsight's a wonderful thing. But ultimately, it didn't cost us. And Joe Hart actually saved
Tomoki Iwata's penalty is absolute class. Mm. And ultimately, you know, obviously, it doesn't get considered the winning penalty because obviously Hart's save is the decisive factor, but it is the winning penalty. And it's, you know, once you're into sudden death, you know, any missed penalty is crucial in a penalty shootout, but once you're into sudden death, you know, it's, you know, that's you. So his penalty was last. Let's just, like, sort of just, like, run through who didn't take one and they were still on the pitch. So the only players that didn't take one was
Cameron
Carter-Vickers, Nawroski, Scales. So yes. Three centre backs.
Greg Taylor.
That's it. Everyone else that was on the pitch took one. Seven penalties. One missed. So of those that didn't take one, who would you have been particularly confident or otherwise on? You know,
maybe Greg Taylor, but
and I wouldn't. Nawroski is probably the most comfortable on the ball. You maybe expect him to be able to hit a decent penalty. Cameron Carter-Vickers, as you know, acting captain after McGregor goes off, is not confident in hitting one, then so be it. Keep him away from it. I wouldn't have fancied Scales either. So, in any semi-final, it's ultimately about getting through. It doesn't really matter if it's a classic or otherwise. In this case, it was a bit of a classic, particularly for the neutral, nerve shredding and stress inducing for everyone else. But it's a good save by Hart in the end. And to be honest, he got pretty close to a couple. Like, I think our penalties were definitely better.
He dived over two. Like, he could easily have gotten down to one of the two of these.
Those are the type of penalties that look like they're easy to save, but they're actually in the place which is hardest to get to. So it's like, you know, it's between your legs and your arms, and it's sort of where your body is, and that's the last bit to get down. So there was two, you're right, two almost identical, I think, in either side, and they went sort of under the body part. But I think he was closer to their penalties than Ruse was to ours. Really, he only got a little bit close to Bernardo's. Everything else was really good. And yeah, in the end, Hart becomes the hero. And we're through. So, as I say, it's semi-final, it's just about getting there. So we can part the cup now, something to look forward to. Massive game at the end of the season, 25th of May. So hugely historical date for us all, Celtic fans. And hopefully we're looking at the opportunity to do a League and Cup double.
Fingers crossed. I mean, it's just that inconsistency, and that's the thing that's bugging me. It's just, and it's within games. Like, we seem incapable of putting 90 minutes together or close enough to 90 minutes together. And that, for me, is the major concern in the run into the end of the season. So don't know if we can crack the code between now and then, but we're going to have to. And that translates into, like you say, Paul, seeing out games when we've got a lead. And if that's only a slender one-goal margin, then, you know, that's got to be enough. Because, you know, we gave it away twice in that game. And, yeah, it's just, it's frustrating. And I'm not saying you have a divine right to win every game. I'm not saying that, but I just feel that at times, you know, again, the old cliche, we shoot ourselves in the foot, and when, you know, that pressure from the front really wasn't there, and just, yeah, all over the places, the intensity wasn't quite what we'd expect and what we'd seen in previous weeks. That's the thing. It was a bit of a drop off in performance, and you don't know if it's, you know, you wouldn't like to think it's because, oh, we're playing Aberdeen, or, you know, they're near the bottom of the league, like, we'll drop our bundle. But yeah, we got our pants pulled down the second minute of the game. So I think they quickly realized that they had to buck their ideas up. But not try to be too negative, because obviously, like you say, Paul, we did get through and we've got a cup final to look forward to at the end of the season. But it's our job to, well, our job, but, you know, we choose to come on and analyze games and give our thoughts on where we can play better, because, you know, it's pretty boring if we just sit here and say everything's rosy, because, you know, we leave that to the other side of Glasgow, because they seem to swallow the Ludamol by the handful. We kind of be a little bit more realistic in our assessments. Paul, time is running out, so we may as well get on to our man of the match. I've got two candidates. I might be a bit swayed by you, so I'll let you go first.
Well, candidates are thin on the ground, aren't they, to be honest? I don't think anyone really put a full performance together. Hitati had a patch for a bit. I've seen mixed reviews of Matt O'Reilly. I thought Matt O'Reilly had a pretty good game, without being spectacular. Topped off with a great goal and a quality penalty. He would have been closest for me. But yeah, the big man between the sticks gets man of the match for me. A couple of crucial saves in the game itself. Big enough to step up and take the crucial penalty. Okay, he missed it, but he redeemed himself with a great save to take us through. So celebrating his 37th birthday this weekend as well, and honoured at a big night with the fans, I think, yesterday as well. Joe Hart is my man of the match.
Honourable mention to James Forrest. I think if his goal had won it in normal time, I think we'd be standing here saying that James Forrest potentially man of the match, because, you know, an assist. Well, actually, the assist came in injury time to make it. Sorry, extra time to make it 3-2. But I think you could make a case for James Forrest. And I think when he came on, we definitely seemed to have a bit more attacking intent and looked a bit more dangerous. So definitely for me, he on another day potentially could have nabbed it, but obviously gets taken off just before the penalty shootout. So can't really contribute in that fashion. So again, I agree with you, Paul. Joe Hart, deserving. And it's probably fair given how the game went, because like you say, there was periods in the game where players maybe stepped up for like flashes, you know, O'Reilly, Hitati, nobody really bossed it for long periods of the game. And I think Joe Hart made enough contributions during normal time. And then obviously the penalty shootout, and, you know, we were victorious based on his save. And like you say, an extra couple of inches to the right and he scores the winning penalty. So, you know, well worth it. And I think, you know, there's a lot of shout and clamour for him to be potentially Celtic's player of the year. And at the moment, I think he's definitely in the box seat for that. I mean, obviously there's still, you know, 5 league games and a cup game to go, but I think he wouldn't be upset if he walked away with player of the year, given the season that we've had, because, you know, your best players, Carter Vickers, Hitati, McGregor, have all had injury spoiled seasons. And, you know, other players have been hot and blowing, hot and cold. So, and I definitely think since the turn of the year, he's been our best player, hands down. So definitely one to look in as in the running.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, Matt O'Reilly had a stunning first half, but Hart's been the better player in the second half of the season. So it'll be between those two. And, you know, both will be key contributors for the remaining 6 games. But there's actually a case for saying that Joe Hart might have had his best and maybe most important season of the three this season.
Oh, if we walk away with a double, definitely. I mean, we can still walk away with nothing. Bearing in mind, we haven't won anything yet. You know, we'd hand him a treble, but, like, you know, we've got to do the business these last 5 or 6 games. So, but if we do, I agree. I think it's probably been the season where we're not winning games by 3 or 4 goals. Like, it's relying on Joe Hart to pull important saves. And I think pretty much every game the second half of the season, he's pulled one, if not two, key important saves that in other seasons haven't really been necessary, or maybe he's not gotten to. So he wants to finish on a high. You can see how much it means to him. So, you know, we're hoping that as fans that we can celebrate with him and he enjoy a very successful career. And he's been a very astute signing for Celtic, probably one of the best signings Celtic's made in the last 2 decades. Hands down. I mean, you know, for a free agent. I mean, it was a good bit of business.
Absolutely.
All righty. Paul, we're at time, so I'm ready to turn over to you for some recommendations. What have you got for us, mate?
Quick music recommendation. This actually came out the back end of last year, but I somehow missed it. Band I really, really, really like, but they had a sort of single come out on Spotify in the last week or two that was recorded at a similar time, so it made me go back. And so the single is The Death of the Punchline, but the album from last year is called The Price of Progress, and it's from the Hold Steady. Hold Steady, based out of New York these days, I think Minneapolis originally, just a kind of in that classic American rock band sort of heritage. Craig Finn and the guys been around for the best part of 20 years. And yeah, I think this might be album number 9 or 10 maybe. But yeah, Hold Steady. If you've not checked them out, please check them out. And the most recent album is The Price of Progress, but it's a couple other, well, there's lots of good albums, but check out their back catalogue as well if you're not already across them.
Fantastic. I started watching Masters of the Air over the weekend. So Apple TV series, a bit of a companion piece to Band of Brothers and The Pacific, same production company, Spielberg, Tom Hanks. So it looks at the American contribution to World War II from the air with all the bomber wings. So I think I'm about 3 or 4 episodes into that, but quite interesting and just a different take on the war from a different point of view. So yeah, well worth a watch because it's acting's pretty good in it. Austin Butler, who played Elvis, Callum Turner, which I'm not actually familiar with the guy, but playing a good part, and then Barry Keane's in it as well. So Saltburn, if you've watched that, that's he's in that one.
I'll do a quick TV recommendation. Quick TV recommendation. I think this is, you know, everywhere at the moment. We're halfway through it because it's not the easiest of watching. And my wife is not a binge watcher at the best of times, and certainly not when the material is this heavy, but it's a brilliant show. Baby Reindeer on Netflix. True story, brutal and gruesome true story. Scottish comedian basically wrote a play based on his life, took it to the fringe, was hugely successful. And now it's been made into a TV show. He stars in it as well. So not only did he go through the trauma that led to the play and then the TV show, he then reacts out that trauma it had, both on stage and now in a TV show. Wow. He's the victim of a stalker, but that's only just sort of scratching the surface. So I won't go into any more detail on that. But it's called Baby Reindeer. It's on Netflix, 8 episodes, about 35 to 40 minutes an episode. Wee warning on it. It does have some triggering material in it, but it's really well done and well written. But yeah, we're halfway through. So I recommend that show for those not of too nervous a disposition.
A few recommendations here quickly. Strange Love the Doctor, A New Tomorrow by Zulu, amazing band. And he's also saying Late Night with the Devil, movie, popcorn film. 4:20, someone have a great day. All hail, hail. And then Who's the Snitch? Let's Go to Prison. Very, very funny. All right. Thank you, everyone. We're up to 118 live. So thank you very much for joining us live. We'll be back following Celtic's away trip to Dundee. Yes, we're off swimming in Huntiers at Dens Park. So we'll be back next week reviewing that one. So please join us. We'll be back 8:30 Western Australian Standard Time, which is, Paul, was that 1:30 or 12:30?
1:30 p.m. 1:30 p.m.
Celtic part time. Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. So thank you very much for joining us all. We'll be back next week. Richard will be back next week as well. So all that's left to say is hail, hail.
Hail, hail.
Podcast Network.